I've had a few delivery jobs that had given me the creeps. One or two that I was pretty sure I was about to be robbed. Another was a gunfight between gang members unfolding in the street I was delivering to, right as I was turning onto it. But these are just occupational hazards. Yeah, it sucks, but I guess you do get over them. Only one delivery job really, truly terrified me. The only one that scares me to think about, even today. So we get an order from an address that none of us drivers had ever delivered to before. This normally causes some suspicion among us, since we're always pretty wary whenever delivering to a new address. A fair few first-time deliveries have resulted in an address getting blacklisted. Sometimes they try to stiff you for money or some other scam to get free pizza. Generally speaking, the drivers take turns delivering to a new address, and this time, it just so happened to be my turn. So once the order is completed and the pizzas are boxed up, I take them out to my car and punch the address into my sat-nav. It turns out the address is right on the edge of our delivery area, pretty much in the middle of absolute nowhere. It dawns on me that this could be the oldest trick in the book. Call the pizza into some hard-to-reach location, then demand it to be free once it takes more than 45 minutes to deliver. But, to my relief, I make it out onto this old dirt road with time to spare. Yet my relief doesn't last long, not when I see the state of the address I'm delivering to. The house is so run down it looks like a squat, like it's been commandeered by the homeless as a place to avoid sleeping rough. There's a musty old pickup in the driveway, its wheels all askew from years of misuse. I mean, the place was just the very definition of haunted house. Needless to say, I wasn't expecting a particularly generous tip. As I take the pizzas out from the passenger seat of my car, I start hearing this faint, whining noise. My ears prick up immediately and I freeze, trying to work out just what the sound is and where it's coming from. I come to realize it's the sound of a violin being played, but more accurately, it was the sound of a violin being played very badly. These discording noises carried on as I walked up the dirt pathway toward the porch and the front door. The sound of some old violin bow being dragged across dry old strings that were way out of tune. Creepy, sure, but that's not what terrified me. When I knocked on the front door, the screaming cat violin sounds ceased instantly. A few moments of silence went by before I began to hear slow, heavy footsteps growing steadily closer. I can't be certain, but I'm almost sure I heard someone breathing on the other side. These heavy, labored breaths as I waited for the door to open. The silence was broken by a metallic snap of the door unlocking, before hurried footfalls sounded on the other side. Someone had unlocked the door, then scampered away from it as if they were overtly skittish about visitors.
Hello? I got your pizza order here.
I remember asking, feeling the tension rise as silence once again engulfed the scene.
Come inside, mister.
A childish voice came from the other side. I wanted to just turn tail and run at this point, but returning to the pizza place without the money for the pizzas would definitely mean a verbal or written warning from my manager. I already had one for turning up late. I couldn't afford another. So, reluctantly, I took hold of the door handle, turned it, and walked inside. The interior of the house was bathed in darkness, only a handful of weak oil lamps to give me any sense of the layout. A figure was crouched on a nearby sofa, the old violin laying next to it.
There's 15 on the table there, mister.
The person sounded like a child, but they looked bigger than they should have. On the small, dusty coffee table in front of the couch, there's a pile of change in little piles. Normally, I'd have taken issue with this, but to be honest, I was desperate to get out of there at that point. I'd have taken any form of currency. As I stooped down to start sliding the little piles of coins into my cup palm, I started to hear the kid's labored breathing again, but I dared not look towards him. I could see its legs in my peripheral vision, and even then, I could see how unnaturally long they were. This person was not a child.
Sorry about the coins, mister. I saved them up I saved them all up to afford this treat for myself. It's all I have.
I told the person not to worry in the sunniest disposition I could muster. The last thing I wanted to do at this point was upset them. I pocketed the coins, barely having counted them. I'd come up with a difference myself if I needed to. Like I said, I just wanted to get out of there. But as I turned to leave, hastily thanking the person, I caught a glimpse of the person's face in the low light of the oil lamps. They were burned, horribly burned up and down their arms and chest. The scarred flesh extended all the way up their face and head, only the person's features were obscured by a small rubber mask. The mask didn't even cover up their entire face, only a small central portion that concealed their eyes, nose, and mouth. The only thing I could really make out was that the mask had a long wooden nose, kind of like the puppet Pinocchio, whose nose would grow whenever he told lies. The small carved eyes were blank. I averted my gaze from the mask and was unable to return it. It was one of the most hideously sad and scary things I'd ever laid eyes on. Just as I had reached the front door, I heard that same childlike voice emanating behind me.
"Want to hear me play a song, mister?"
Before I even had the chance to answer, to tell them I was too busy with deliveries to hang out, they had grabbed the old violin next to them and began to whine out of tune. Although the strings were almost totally out of tune, I started to make out the tune they were trying for. You know the one. "If you go down in the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise. If you go down in the woods today, you better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the teddy bears have their picnic." I was in the back of the driver's seat of my car before you could say nope, I'm out, scrambling to start the engine so I could make a quick getaway. I don't think they had any intention of hurting me. I certainly wasn't as in much danger as when those idiot Crip and Blood wannabes decided to shoot it out like right in front of my car. But something about that place still creeps back into my mind while I lay there in darkness trying to sleep. Something that means I'll never, ever make another delivery there. I'll quit before I go back. I'm ashamed to say it, but it needs to be said. I screwed up on my job and a man died because of it. Not just a man I was being paid to protect. Usually it can be forgiven for making a mistake on my first job. However, when it's your first job protecting another man from outside dangers, one mistake can be the last. In retrospect, hindsight, whatever word you use, I wish I'd never agreed to taking the job. Just being a large-built man with a license to carry doesn't make you qualified to be a private security. This all being said, I took the job. The client losing his life is a direct result of my negligence. Maybe if I discuss what happened, I can relieve myself of a small amount of this burden. However, I can assure you I know the guilt will never truly fade away. The job came out of nowhere. Mike, a close friend of mine, had been a bodyguard on and off for years. He made it clear the job was a one-time-only deal. No other guys he knew were available on such short notice. His next client was coming into town in the morning. Mike needed someone with a carry permit to back him up. He knew I had one, so I got the call. He assured me it wasn't a dangerous situation, but he liked to have another guy to watch his and the client's back. I was somewhat nervous initially, but the money I was offered was too good to pass up. We met up at his place later that night. He gave me a rough outline of what I was expected to do. Once it had been all laid out before me, it seemed simple enough. Although this would be his first time with this particular client, he assured me once more it would be simple. After all, the guys with the real problems always had their own staff. Our client was a regular suit and tie in town for some business. 4 hours of work and he'd be back on a plane home. The morning of the job, we met with the client at the airport. A third guy, Roger, was doing the driving for us that day. He's a retired SWAT officer who picked up the occasional driving job for Mike. He'd had a boatload of training and evasive maneuvers while he was in the army. Plus, he could be a third gun in an emergency. He drove us to the client's first appointment, and everything was going well. From what I could make out, the dude was a wholesale jeweler out of London. Stuff didn't really start falling apart until we were leaving the second place. As we exited the jeweler's store, I noticed a sketchy-looking, possibly Middle Eastern guy. He was standing in front of the place next door. When he noticed us leaving, he pulled a knife from his pocket and ran towards us. Before he could get anywhere near us, I instinctively moved toward him. He turned and ran, and I foolishly gave chase. I'd gotten somewhere around 30 yards and heard a barrage of gunshots behind me. I turned around just in time to see Mike go down. The client was already on the ground and wasn't moving. Roger was standing next to the car, shooting at two men running from the scene. By the time I'd drawn my pistol, the firefight had ended. It was clear to me I'd messed up. As Roger and I checked Mike and the client for signs of life, a weak few words came from Mike. "I hope you won't be offended if I don't ask for your help again." We had a brief chuckle, but we both knew this wasn't a laughing matter. Roger confirmed that the client was in fact dead. I rode to the hospital with Mike, and Roger stayed behind with the cops. This big mess made no sense. I knew I could trust Mike. He said the client indicated no current danger to his life. We were supposed to be only there to prevent robberies. We'd both seen the guy with a load of stones on him, so no flags went up. Regardless, considering the number of guys in on the hit, I had a strong feeling we didn't get the whole story. I'd been waiting for news on Mike for about half an hour when Roger finally showed. The cops were right behind him. Now it was my turn. When they were done with me, they wanted to talk to Mike, but he was still in surgery. 2 hours later, we got the good news. He was going to make it, but he'd be in the hospital for the next week at the least. For the next 9 days, I stayed at his side. It was the least I could do. The following morning, we had our first discussion since the shooting. "You do realize the guy with the blade was a decoy, right?" "It became pretty obvious once I heard you all yell at me to come back." "Listen, don't feel guilty. It's not your fault. I've fallen for dumber things than that." We continued our talk for a while until Mike fell asleep. No matter what he said, though, I'd always feel bad. A man lost his life, after all. The detectives showed up later that day and pumped him for any new info, but Mike had none. Mike was released 8 days later. Neither of us heard anything new until Roger called Mike 5 days later with some inside information he'd gotten from one of his pals. The client had been far from honest with us. He had hired us because he was involved in a deal with some men in which he screwed them out of $100,000. They had made it known if he was to return to the States, he'd be whacked. If Mike would have known this beforehand, he wouldn't have taken the job. That's likely why the dirtbag kept it quiet. Somehow this bit of info had made it past the background check. Nonetheless, even a crook doesn't deserve to be sprayed with bullets on a public street. We were only hearing it from their side. It could have all been a huge misunderstanding. After my anger cooled, it became obvious to me that I was just deflecting my feelings onto the client. Thief or not, I was responsible for the safety of the man. Not only had my mistake gotten him killed, a very good friend of mine almost did too. When Mike's back in fighting shape, I'm sure he'll return to security work, albeit in a slightly more careful manner. I'm just glad he's still kicking. I hope he gets someone in the future far more competent than myself. When it comes to me, I think I'll stick to construction. It appears to be a hole, a lot safer.